Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
To Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Roll away the dawn. Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Horses are.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. Today is Wednesday. It is the 6th of June in the year 2007. And I'm glad that you've been able to join us tonight. I wonder how you're all doing, how your weather's doing. I wonder, are you gardening? Are you getting ready to garden? And I hope that you are. Those of you who listen regularly would have heard Jeffrey Smith when he was on with us several weeks ago. We were talking about his new book, the information in his new book, Genetic Roulette. And you could find him. I don't know if Darren's got him linked us in our links yet or not. But if you put the name of the book, Genetic Roulette, or his other book was Seeds of Deception. And folks, if you read his new book about the genetically modified food, about the testing that has been done, and the damage, unrepairable damage it appears that it does to the physical body, you would be terrified to not be eating what you absolutely know is healthy and normal and real and not GM food. And I'm not talking about hybridization. That's a whole different story, because all they're doing is taking two different types of the same species to hopefully maybe make a stronger or less or more, let's say, more pest resistant, etc., varieties, or disease resistant. But when you take a potato and you put a gene, let's say from, I believe that the name of the plant was the star drop. It's some type of a flower. Excuse me. And the flower, they tested it. They tested the, evidently on animals, and found that there was nothing wrong with it. So they took a gene from this flower and put it in a potato. They wanted the potato to actually be able to grow its own pesticide, because evidently this star drop or whatever this flower is called, I don't have the book in front of me, whatever it's called, well, guess what? Once they insert that gene from a whole other species, the thing goes rampant. And I don't have, as I said, I don't have the book in front of me. So I can't go into the details for you, but once again, the name of the book is Genetic Roulette, and I hope, I urge all of you, and I hope that you are, for your sake, if not for your sake, for the sake of your children, I hope that you're gardening and organic garden as closely as you can to organic gardening. And it's a wonderful thing to do as a family, and it's very satisfying, and it gets back to nature. And remember that quote, that statement, I've quoted Paul Von Ward from his book God's Genes and Consciousness, that nature is the physical level of reality. I believe that is so. And that's why we all, when we're out in nature, when we're away from the cities, when we're even out of our homes in the cities, because we've got electricity here, when we're out of our homes, when we're outside there, there's a whole different feeling. It's a calming feeling. And it gets us back. When we're close to nature, we're getting more in touch with our spirit. I believe that to be true. And I didn't actually intend to go off on that this evening, but sometimes a thought hits me. What I have here, we're going to talk about Ron Paul tonight, by the way. But I've got Paul Von Ward's other book, Our Solarian Legacy. It just came in the mail today, and I haven't read it yet. I'm really anxious to get into it. The subtitle of this book is Multidimensional Humans in a Self-Learning Universe. It's a book by Paul Von Ward. And those of you, once again, if you're a regular listener, you've heard Paul on Sweet Liberty, and maybe some of you would tend to throw it out, the information that he presents is nonsense. I think it is unwise, until we can actually have evidence of something, to reject anything. We don't have to accept it as truth, but we don't have to reject it out of hand either. That could be dangerous. Frivolous, maybe frivolous. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just read the preface of this book to you, and then we're going to get on to Ron Paul. And I haven't read the preface. I just started it. And so then we'll do this together. Excuse me. He says, "Are you ready?" In the company of frontier scientists and metaphysicians, to engage in an assessment of many of society's most cherished assumptions about the history of the earth and its human inhabitants? Are you ready to look at published research material developed by independent scholars and to personally test their insights with your own experience? If you are, I promise a dramatically reshaped perspective on the human legacy, and consequently, on your approach to daily life by the time you complete this book. Does this sound fascinating to you? It does to me. As humanity faces some of the most profound challenges in our history, I believe we are simultaneously provided with the internal resources to meet them. In expanding our view of this universe, we will also enhance our grasp of the inner resources available to us. Though our telescopes cannot yet see beyond the curve of space-time, we can open our inner eyes to the full spectrum of a multidimensional reality. The book that follows is not intended to cover all the evidence for our Solarian legacy. You'll learn the full meaning of that term in the following chapters. The Solarian legacy. Over 150 books and articles are referenced, and many more contribute to this new view of the cosmos. I attempt to articulate a provisional but realistic picture of the human legacy by synthesizing the ideas of countless others who willingly test alternative perceptions of reality. I examine material that has been either dismissed as unscientific by the intellectual establishment or ignored because of its unconventional sources. Included are studies on improperly labeled paranormal phenomena, reports of intelligent non-human beings, intriguing evidence of forgotten advanced civilizations, compelling findings of frontier science, and wisdom germinated in some cosmic seedbed that springs up in unexpected ways. Though the material and its implications can be disturbing at first, I believe they ground us in a more stable field of conscious awareness. I try to balance openness with a healthy skepticism in this effort to move beyond a period of self-imposed blinders into an era of our being self-conscious and self-directing cosmic beings. Although I am passionate about the ideas set forth here, my fervor should be tempered by your own experience. As the book reflects on my ongoing testing, I invite you to put its implicit and explicit assumptions to critical review. They should be found credible only if the following conditions are met. The integration of my ideas makes intellectual sense to you. The interpretations resonate with your own observations, and your own experiences validate the hypotheses. You'll take them seriously for your own reasons. These ideas don't come from a chosen person with a special message from a divine or higher source of knowledge or power. I hope you find it valuable to engage in a joint exploration with a committed fellow human, seriously trying to be as self-aware as possible in order to learn how to realize his full potential. Next heading here is a time of reckoning. Much ado has been made of the current era, but does it have any particular inherent significance in human history? Should we really believe something profoundly new is underway? Did the start of a new Christian calendar millennium have any intrinsic meaning? As you will learn in this book, I believe in taking a hard look at the evidence and drawing the most simple and direct conclusion possible from it. For example, different traditions have different calendars: Christian, Chinese, Muslim, Jewish, Mayan. Each represents artificial reference points. Listen, each represents artificial reference points to position us in relation to particular historical events. Consequently, there is no universal validity to any one of them. So, a millennium date provides only a social consensus for reflection, like using a birthday for reviewing the past year or making resolutions at the start of a new year. Does that make sense to you folks? Let's just do that again. Just think about this. I've never really thought about this. Did the start of a new Christian calendar millennium have any intrinsic meaning? As you will learn in this book, I believe in taking a hard look at the evidence and drawing the most simple and direct conclusions possible from it. For example, different traditions have different calendars: Christian, Chinese, Muslim, Jewish, Mayan. Each represents artificial reference points to position us in relation to particular historical events. Consequently, there's no universal validity to any one of them. So a millennium date provides only a social consensus for reflection. Yeah, that makes sense to me. We say we're in the 21st century when this world and and beings have been here for hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years, yes? And we talk about the 21st century as though that's all the time that there's ever been here. Well, actually, it does position us, doesn't it? In our minds, it positions us as from the time that allegedly that Jesus was born. Right? But like he says, it's an artificial. Many prophetic and esoteric traditions describe the period from now to 2030 as a human transition from one age to another. In her book, Children of the New Millennium, P.M.H. Atwaters places several of these traditions in the context of her work with children's near-death experience. Those are referenced as NDEs, near-death experiences. She believes the after effects of their NDEs will jumpstart the evolution of a new human in the age of Aquarius beginning around 2020. Similar predictions she and others highlight include the Edgar Cayce, the famous 20th century psychic, prediction of a new human race appearing between 1998 and 2010. I didn't know about that either. The coming of a, quote, blue race, the Christian, second coming of Christ, the prophecy by early Americans of the coming of the white buffalo, and the Mayan calendar, indicating a new era that starts in 2012. We must wait for events to confirm or deny any such theories. The next heading is self-starting a new epoch. I do not think we have to resort to such esoteric and subjective messages to entertain the probability of a significant shift in human development. The pieces for a new model of reality have already been discovered by frontier historians and frontier scientists. We now only have to put them together and look at their ramifications. The effort, as I suggest in this book, gives us a wholly new way of thinking about the nature of the universe and our place in it. The newly synthesized material has many external implications, but the most dramatic change will be in the inner realms of consciousness and subtle senses. While the potential for a new epoch is there, its manifestation will depend on humanity's collective choice. Think about that, folks. While the potential for a new epoch is there, its manifestation will depend on humanity's collective choice. We can accept the challenge of self-actualization or defer it for a larger, later generation. Profound advancements in human knowledge over the past several decades beg for a beyond the millennium review of what I call our Solarian legacy. I use the term Solarian, and that's spelled S-O-L-A-R-I-A-N, because the evidence is now clear that we're more than byproducts of the planet Earth. Humans are not the accidental result of a random Big Bang universe that created life, quote, by chance. Neither are they unique creatures born in the Garden of Eden, subject to the absentee parenting of an anthropomorphic, parentheses, made in the image of man, God. He's referring to Jehovah, made in the image of man. Humans are local manifestations of a universal consciousness that informs all life. Humans are local manifestations of a universal consciousness that informs all life. If not yet cosmic beings, we are at least Solarians with the heritage from the stars. In our Solarian microcosm, I believe humans mirror all of the characteristics of a powerful, self-learning organism. This book develops the concept that that organism is the universe itself. I don't know how many times I've said that the universe is benevolent. I don't know how else to say that, folks. And when I speak about that, I'm speaking of Creator. And I have discovered that the universe is benevolent. He says the universe can be assumed to be alive because we are alive. On Earth, there is a glorious proliferation of life forms and behaviors. All this running, eating, sleeping, rutting, birthing, growing, learning, and dying involve the most ordinary of materials, the same particles that constitute the lowest forms of dirt and mud and pollution. The very same particles in their quanta of energy filled the universe. The basic question likely asked by any self-aware species is, what consciousness animates this whole thing? I believe the evidence covered in this book points in the direction of a self-manifesting conscious universe that continues to develop through a process of self-learning. I hope by the end of this book you will take seriously two notions: that the universe arose from a conscious force that manifests matter and energy to experience itself in as many ways as possible, and that conscious beings, including humans, are local manifestations of that original consciousness designed to actively participate in the experimentation, adaptation, and survival of a living organism, our universe. When I was in the School of Metaphysics, a definition of Creator was given as intelligent thought. That's an interesting concept, isn't it, folks? And I think that's basically, in a sense, what Paul von Ward is saying here. And I've thought about that. And if we are in the mind of our Creator, if we are the thoughts of Creator, then remember the statement that is attributed to Jesus, that the kingdom of God is within you. That makes sense, doesn't it? He says, I and my Father are one. He is in me as I am in you and you are in me. And think of the consciousness of plants. Think about what we've learned about that. I have not read the book. I would like to get that book, The Secret Life of Plants. And I'll tell you what fascinated me even more so than the plants, because I've known about that for a long time, is the fact that the cells, the white cells of the physical body, according to that book, they've gone beyond their according to The Secret Life of Plants, the book The Secret Life of Plants, they've gone, expanded their experimentation outside of just plant life, and they took cells, a cotton swab, and got white cells from inside the lip or mouth of an individual. And they found, folks, just think about this. I know I've mentioned this before, but some of this stuff, it calls for repetition. To really think about this, because this fascinates the heck out of me, that those white cells, somehow they were able to put them in some type of a medium and to read the emanations from those cells outside of the body, the host body. Those cells continued to respond and react according to the intensity of the emotions of the host. And so therefore, let's say if they took a swab from my mouth and put some of my white cells into a medium there, and what they found out is that, let's say I say something, but I have no emotion behind it. I have no feeling behind it. I'm just mouthing words. Nothing's happening to those cells. But if I become emotional, regardless of what type of an emotion it is, if it's fear, if it's anxiety, love, that cell responds outside of my body. And they said a distance does not matter. That cell can be 300 miles away and respond to the emotions of that host body. Now, you think about this. It is said that the body follows the mind. In other words, disease, dis-ease, is always correlated. A certain area of the body because of certain attitudes or emotions. Attitudes are emotions, aren't they? And so therefore, what do you think, how do you think cells of the body react if we get absolutely furiously angry? Do you think it might really cause those cells to just go nuts, throw them off balance? What if we go around life angry? What if we go around life hating? What do you think happens to the physical body? The cells in the physical body that are responding to that negative energy. Do you find that fascinating? I do, and I'll tell you what it really, really... To me, it is a reminder, a confirmation, and a reminder that our attitude means everything. And we've talked about this before, about having feelings of anger and hatred for the cretins that are seeming to be in control of this physical world today. And in more than just the physical world, the minds of the people in this world. And I talked about this a long, long time ago. I guess 7, 8 years ago, I don't know how long ago, when I got thinking about it, when people, you know, would ask me, how can you not hate them? Well, I choose not to. Because even though it was probably at that time more of a intellectual belief, I had experiences of what happens when your attitude gets out of shape. I put myself in the hospital a couple times. But what occurred to me a long time ago is that our negative energy actually helps, actually adds energy to this plan. The evil that's in the world, we're giving, they feed off it. And I believe, and I don't know this is so, I believe that it cannot resonate to love. And so therefore, when we are in love, whether that be and I'm talking about feelings of love at the beauty of a sunset, at the precious face of a brand new little baby or a child, or the birds singing. All of that, if we listen and we look and we begin to appreciate and resonate with that, what do you think could happen in this world if enough of us were able to maintain that type of an attitude and to stay in love, choosing to focus on that which we love rather than on that on which we might have a justification for saying, I hate. And I know it's something to think about, isn't it? We're going to take a break here tonight. And then we're going to be right back, and I'll pick up where I was reading. I'll have to find my place. And I hope this is as interesting to you as it is to me, and thoughtful, or thought-provoking. Be right back, folks.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Have you seen Loose Change? The best darn documentary produced in the 911 truth movement. Why waste your money keeping up the Jones or getting stuck in plain sight when the best is free? You can find a link to download and watch the video, Loose Change, free on the FirstAmendmentRadio.com homepage. If you don't do internet or can't download, just send $5 cash to cover shipping and handling to First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, Tulare, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. 139 East Tulare Avenue, Tulare, T-U-L-A-R-E, California, 93274. And we will send you a copy of this must-see, must-share DVD, Loose Change, the best darn documentary produced in the 911 truth movement. Make sure you don't miss it, and tell everyone you know.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Well, okay. I'm going to go back to the reading of the preface of the book, of Paul Von Ward's new book. No, it isn't new. God's Genes and Consciousness is his most recent one. This is Our Solarian Legacy, the Multidimensional Humans in a Self-Learning Universe. I really like this already. I'm excited to really get into the book. I'm going to continue here. And where I got off track, well, not off track, but off the book here, is when he said that this book develops the concept that the organism is the universe itself. He says, I believe humans mirror all the characteristics of a powerful self-learning organism. And this book develops the concept that the organism is the universe itself. The universe can assumed, I know I'm rereading a paragraph, the universe can be assumed to be alive because we are alive. On Earth, there is a glorious proliferation of life forms and behaviors. All this running, eating, sleeping, rutting, birthing, growing, learning, and dying involve the most ordinary of materials, the same particles that constitute the lowest forms of dirt and mud and pollution. The very same particles and their quanta of energy filled the universe. The basic question, likely asked by any self-aware species, is what consciousness animates this whole thing. I believe the evidence covered in this book points in the direction of a self-manifesting conscious universe that continues to develop through a process of self-learning. I hope by the end of this book you will take seriously two notions: that the universe arose from a conscious force that manifests matter and energy to experience itself in as many ways as possible, and that conscious beings, including humans, are local manifestations of that original consciousness designed to actively participate in the experimentation, adaptation, and survival of a living organism, our universe. If such a role is our Solarian destiny, getting there means full use of all human capacities. It requires an epic that accepts the challenge to experience life to its fullest, using all senses and powers to understand the reality of what we are, of what we are parts, and taking responsibility for our impact on the entire organism. Think about that. Think about that. Taking responsibility for our impact on the entire organism. If we accept this challenge, we must reassess all areas of human assumptions and experience. We can no longer focus research in narrow professions and ignore many aspects of human experiences that do not fit our particular profession's vision of reality. It is time to identify our complete and true heritage and potential. As this book will demonstrate, humanity has a much longer and more complex history and potential than currently portrayed in academic tests. In the 1980s, the discussion of the idea of a paradigm shift in the physical sciences and other intellectual disciplines became popular, promoted by the books of people like Capra, Gary Zukav, Marilyn Ferguson's book Aquarian Conspiracy, Personal and Social Transformation in the 1980s, helped give mainstream credibility to the idea of a new age of societal thought and behavior. He's not talking about a new age movement, folks. He's not talking about sitting and doing nothing because this is all an illusion. What he's talking about is becoming part of it and taking responsibility for our impact on the entire organism. In the 1990s, writers and workshop leaders with channeled material prophesied the advent of a new era. Many philosophers and scientists promoted in books and conferences a merger or synthesis of science and religion. At the end of the millennium, science touted breakthroughs that would revolutionize our interactions with the physical world and our own bodies. So, the stage is set for the initiation of a new epoch in human history. And this next heading is Transcending Science and Religion. We might be talking about Ron Paul next week. This has a few more pages, and I found out that I've read just about as many in the first half. Of course, I did get off on a tangent there. Transcending Science and Religion. He said, in my view, the popularly envisaged new epoch requires more fundamental change in thinking and practice than the merger of traditional religion and conventional science. We must transcend both to reach a new level of human consciousness, one that goes beyond such limited ways of knowing. I believe we need a meta-science, and of course the word meta is a Greek word meaning beyond, like metaphysics, beyond the physical. And there is nothing New Age about metaphysics, folks. He says, I believe we need a meta-science that combines all channels to knowledge, physical, emotional, and mental, and uses a multidimensional approach to reassess even the basic tenets of science and religion. Given the breadth and depth of the multi-leveled insights emerging from the frontiers of research, it is impossible for one or even a few to see the whole emerging pattern. Therefore, it's no surprise that we perceive only fragments of potentially the most significant human material, psychological, and intellectual breakthrough in 6,000 years. In this context, the most I can offer is a new framework for seeking answers to the perennial questions that call out for new understandings. In the introduction, I try to make explicit my implicit assumptions and identify my suggested hypotheses for what they are, one person's effort to see through the glass less darkly. That is something that you will appreciate about Paul von Wurtz's writings, at least I did, in God's Genes and Consciousness, and I see it evident here, is that he doesn't state, okay, this is the way it is, and then we're supposed to take it in and believe it. He is offering information, researched evidence, and offering his hypotheses for each and every one of the readers of the book to make their own determination on it. Maybe to hold it in abeyance and say, well, we'll see. Hold it for further evidence, for further experiencing. Because it is truly our experiences that take us from the believing into the knowing arena, isn't it, folks? And then he continues, he says, the mosaic of new insights from meta-science has revealed a whole much greater than the sum. The mosaic of new insights from meta-science has revealed a whole much greater than the sum of individual discoveries. The cutting-edge sciences of quantum mechanics, consciousness studies, and prehistory, combined with widespread intellectual and psychological receptivity, are triggering a shift in consciousness more profound than a new intellectual paradigm. Current increases in human knowledge and awareness of what's unknown, with the sense of a concomitant increase in human potential, are unprecedented in recorded history. The scope of incipient fundamental change dwarfs the Industrial Revolution of 200 years ago, the European Renaissance, of five centuries ago, the Roman Empire's co-optation of Christianity 1,600 years ago, and the establishment of kingship and priesthood in Sumeria and Egypt more than 5,500 years ago. The most important parameters of this new meta-scientific perspective on humanity and our universe, the evidence for which is reviewed in this book, may be summarized as follows. Our self-manifesting universe is self-learning and consciously self-directing. This singular organism has three facets: physical matter and energy, subtle energies, and universal consciousness. Two, consciousness is the primary field whence all else arises. Local manifestations of universal consciousness inform and sustain all life forms, including humans. I'm going to read that again. Consciousness is the primary field whence all else arises. Local manifestations of universal consciousness inform and sustain all life forms, including humans. talking about universal consciousness. Robert Allen called me. Robert's been on the air with us a couple times. He and I get into some really just awesome conversations, very fascinating and very stimulating. And we were talking this past week about this very thing, universal consciousness. What do you think would happen if everybody in the whole world, all at one time, totally believed, absolutely believed, the way we do now, like a knowing that the sun comes up in the east? What is that? What if every single mind changed and every single person, individual, said, oh, the sun comes up in the west? What do you think would happen, folks? I think we'd have a sun coming up in the west. And maybe our, quote, belief in this physical realm, our consciousness and our focus here, holds it in place. Who's to say? I think that's what he's saying here, don't you? That local manifestations of universal consciousness inform and sustain all life forms, including humans. And the next one, number three, this is a summary that he believes in, you know, that he's giving of the book, that it's going to point out. Intelligent human life has existed on Earth much longer than we have believed. Humans are consciously, emotionally, and physically interdependent with all species. Beings, this is another, number four. Beings similar to Homo sapiens live in other solar systems, and some have had a long history of interaction with humans. Five, science and technologies, at least as advanced as that of the 20th century, were used on Earth millennia ago. Science and technologies, at least as advanced as that of the 20th century, were used on Earth millennia ago. Technology ahead of the current human level exists beyond Earth. Next, these are actually bullets. The history of Earth and its inhabitants have been dramatically affected by cataclysmic events that left gaps in the geological and archaeological record. And folks, when Alan Watt used to be on with us, he quit mentioning him, but especially towards the beginning when people were saying, okay, which books should I read? Which books should I read? He continued to mention Emmanuel Velikovsky. Those are two of the most fascinating books. I've read a lot of fascinating books. They were two. The two that I read, they were the kind that you just almost could not put down. I had to get them from ABE Books. I believe you can get them from the library. And the one is Worlds in Collision, and the other one is Earth in Upheaval. I got, because these books were so fabulous, I found his other ones on ABE Books, used books. You could find them probably in the used books sellers. It's Worlds in Collision, and the other one is Earth in Upheaval. This talks about the cataclysm that Paul von Wart is mentioning here, and it is fascinating beyond words. And I mean that. But I got his other books. I was very disappointed. I read one of them, and I just quit reading, because basically what I saw that he was doing in those other books was rearranging historical dates to coincide with the Old Testament, to give the Old Testament historical validity. And I think that may be why Alan quit recommending him, but I would, those two books I would recommend highly, and so did Alan Watt. And I know that many of you have heard Alan and have a great respect for his knowledge of ancient history. Well, knowledge of a lot of things, not everything. Okay, I'll read that one again. The history of Earth and its inhabitants have been dramatically affected by cataclysmic events that left gaps in the geological and archaeological record. Another bullet, human beings are more mentally, psychologically, and physically interactive with each other and the rest of the universe than we normally imagine. There are no separations, and human consciousness mirrors that of the universe's creators. Bullet. Our conscious awareness is not limited by the world of five senses. We have subtle and noumenal senses parallel to our physical ones to function in our multidimensional reality. I want to share an experience I had with you when we talk about, when he talks here, going beyond the five senses, being able to see with the inner eye or hear with that inner ear. This was back in Illinois. I lived in a wooded subdevelopment, and it was a beautiful place, big, huge, giant black and white oaks. It was a beautiful place to live, too, as where I am now. I'm very grateful to have had these experiences. But anyway, I always have loved being out in nature, and especially if you live in a city, if you have a chance to get away, then I wanted to go camping. And I always felt so good in the woods. And I was meditating one day. I was sitting on the floor in my bedroom, and it was placed against the wall that I used to sit and meditate. And when I came out from the meditation and I opened my eyes, I looked across the room. Well, I didn't. That's where my eyes were staring, because I was sitting against the wall. And facing me was the nightstand of my bed. I may have told you this, but I don't recall telling you this. The nightstand, which is solid wood, right across from me, had a white glow around it, an aura. I saw the aura of the wood in that nightstand. And what was really fascinating was the fact that it was breathing. And that's the only way I could say it. The aura was out there around 10 inches, just a white glow around that entire nightstand. And it would go in to about 2 inches and go back out again. And just went in and out. And in my peripheral vision, as I was looking at that, in my peripheral vision, I could see that every piece of wood in that room was glowing. And of course, as soon as my conscious mind, as soon as I got involved, because I was so, I don't want to keep using the word awesome, but I went to myself. I thought, wow. And as soon as I did that, I lost it. I don't see auras naturally. Some people see auras naturally, the energy that emanates, and not just from human beings, but from all living things. And from my understanding, even rocks have an energy that is emitted, so that everything living, everything in this world, we're all part of it, folks. And I like that. It makes sense to me. And when I saw that beautiful aura and realized that even though that tree had been cut down, that the beautiful piece of furniture that was made from it still had that consciousness in it. And there's nothing New Age about meditation either. Don't let anybody tell you that. Even somebody that you think is all-powerful and all-knowing, because nobody knows everything. And some people would try to steer you wrong, keep you off in another direction. So that last sentence, there are no separations, and human consciousness mirrors that of the universe's creators. Here's another. Our conscious awareness is not... Oh, this is the last one I read. I keep laying the book down when I'm talking to you. Our conscious awareness is not limited by the world of five senses. We have subtle... I think the word is pronounced noumenal. N-O-U-M... E-N-A-L, subtle and noumenal senses parallel to our physical ones to function in our multidimensional reality. Another bullet. Human beings have much more inner power to influence internal and external events among themselves and in the universe at large than most now understand. Those of you who are longtime listeners probably remember Alan and I in conversations like this, that everything we do, every moment, every second, means everything, everywhere. And that's, as Paul von Wert said, I think it was a great way to put it, is taking responsibility for our impact. Yes? And the next one, the last one, humanity is on the threshold of understanding its true identity as co-designers of our self-learning universe. Humanity is on the threshold of understanding its true identity as co-designers of our self-learning universe. He says, as these understandings become widely known, I believe humans will embark on a new phase of human participation in the ongoing development of the universe that can exceed all the predictions of a new era mentioned earlier. And here the next heading is a new cosmogony. Elaboration of most of the above new concepts is best left to the appropriate chapters, but one central idea needs explanation from the beginning: the self-manifestation and self-learning nature of the universe. My decades-long study of the material covered by or referred to in this book has led me to a modification of certain currently accepted cosmogonies. Those are theories. Cosmogony is the theory of the origin of the universe. He says modern science has replaced the long-standing concept of a clockwork universe with labels such as unfolding, holographic, reflexive, recursive, conscious, self-organizing, living energy, and self-aware. But I believe that when we incorporate evidence of intentionality, feedback, and conscious change into our model of the universe, a degree of purposefulness emerges. When individual aspects of nature exhibit the capacity for learning from experience, as evidence indicates, we can reasonably infer that the whole organism is engaged in a process of self-learning. Many physicists and metaphysicians now agree that the evidence suggests that the primary substrata of all matter and energy in the element we call consciousness. We're out of our hour. I can't believe this. So I'm not going to finish this. Paul von Wert, vonwert.com. And you can go to his website and you can get this book. It's there. And I don't know about you, but I believe that we're going to find this very fascinating. Paul's coming back on with us Wednesday, the first Wednesday in August, which I believe is August 3rd. So do mark your calendar. And I'll be back with you next Wednesday. So bless you. Thank you for being here.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom.